Polish the Mirror podcast, episode number 15. Here we are again, number 15. Isn't this fun? I'm Amy Thurman, your host. And this, if you have not caught one of these before, the purpose of this podcast is to allow people to share their stories of hope gained in the midst of adversity. It's a reflection of my life. I have lived the past 10 years with a broken neck and been able to find hope in the midst of that adversity. And so I wanted to create a platform for other people to be able to share their stories of hope gained in the midst of adversity too. So that's what this is about. It's streaming live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, all the things. I think it still streams live on Facebook. I'm not sure. I'll have to check that, honestly. And then I upload or download the audio to all of the podcasting platforms. So you can catch it on any of those, on any of those platforms. Or go to hashtag Polish the Mirror podcast and you can find it there. So welcome, welcome. If this is your first time, I'm so glad you're here. I love, love being able to share this and provide this opportunity for people. So let me introduce you to my friend and guest today. I'm so excited to hear what you have to share today. Andrew, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Amy. Then I will mention, because you haven't yet, this is the second time I've done a podcast with you, and I'm so happy to be back and have this opportunity.
Yes, I was going to mention that we did one before in my 100 Days, 100 Emotions series, and you talked about gratitude, and that was such a good episode. I was like, we're having Andrew back, like he's coming back, because it was such a good conversation. So I'm so excited and pleased that you enjoyed it and are willing to join me again today. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, of course. I would love for you to share your story of hope gained in the midst of adversity with the listeners and the viewers. And whatever you want to share, I'm not going to pressure you to share anything you don't want to share. So take it away. The stage is yours, Andrew.
Thank you, Amy. Yeah, so I would like to talk to everybody today about the transition from a military career. I was 20 years in the Navy. To a civilian career and what that looks like and the challenges that presents. Ultimately, I'm going to share a very specific story about that transition, but I hope that the audience can take some pieces of this story and apply it to what does it look like to transition in any part of our life, right? A new living situation, whatever that looks like, that's what I really want to I want to make this feel pretty universal. So I did do 20 years in the military. I did 10 years in submarines, and then I did 10 years in Navy intelligence. So I had a really interesting career. I might be the only Navy person who's never set foot in a foreign country because none of my jobs ever required it. So I did all of my time either out at sea under the water or stateside. You and I were talking before we started recording that the military is a very interesting animal. there's a very specific set of rules and guidelines. So if you sort of imagine in civilian world, we have laws and regulations and all of these things, but the military has yet another set of those regulations and laws, and it's very ingrained into everything you do, including, you know, we wear uniforms. So there's a specific way that a uniform is worn, and it's either right or it's wrong. And people will tell you when it's wrong and correct you. There's ways that we do tasks. There's everything has a very clear set of instructions. In the civilian world, that's not always true. In certainly both realms, we deal with ambiguity, but the military has a way to deal with ambiguity, right? Like there's an instruction for how to do that. So you know, you come from this very regimented environment where we were talking about the military provides housing or provides an allowance for housing, right? So there is a consideration, no matter where the military moves you, you're always going to have a home. You don't have to worry about it. I mean, you have to look for an apartment or whatever, but the means to obtain that apartment are usually secured. And my experience was that in military towns, usually apartment complexes know how much you get paid for housing, and their rent magically becomes that number, right? So it sort of doesn't matter what it might be outside of that. If they know you've got $1,500 a month, that rent becomes $1,500 a month.
Wow.
So it, you know, like you get your home, you get your You know, you get your rules, you get your clothes, you get your social network. You've suddenly become not just this idea of these are people that I work with, but, you know, like in the Navy, we have terms like shipmate, right? Which can be a little pejorative, but so I mean, mostly means like, hey, these are my brothers. These are the people, my brothers and sisters. These are the
people. You have a built-in community.
With every day. Absolutely. And, yeah. And it was after hours hanging out with people. It was, you know, like these were your friends. And even to the extent that my wife belonged to the wives club for the submarine that I was on board. So though, you know, because their husbands were leaving to go out to sea, they had a support network community to take care of the families that were left behind at home. They're just, you know, like everything is really baked into the pie there. And so that transition to go out of the military becomes pretty confusing because suddenly your coworkers are just your coworkers. They're not also your friends, they could be, but it's not assumed that that's going to happen. The rules might be flexible or very poorly defined, as we find in some businesses. We certainly do not get any consideration for providing housing at a certain level befitting your, you know, your rank and station. Maybe if you're a CEO of a company or, you know, like a pastor who gets a parish, right? Like you might have some instances where that happens, but most of us who work an office job or you work at Walmart, those companies don't care too much, right? You get your pay and all of the details of sorting out your personal life are yours. And you don't have a lot of support or guidance on where to live and, you know, who to hang out with and what you're supposed to wear. All of that becomes a much bigger set of choices. And I think most people take that for granted because you kind of come up in the system where you have choices. And certainly before I joined the military, I had choices of what I was going to wear. But then when I did that for 20 years and I had those rules and I had that support network, coming out of it on the other side became very confusing. You know, it's almost, it's a little dramatic to say it was overwhelming, but, you know, it added to some things that I had to think about every day that I didn't have to think about otherwise. The other thing that the military has that the outside world is usually fuzzier on is an idea of a chain of command or some command structure. And we might see at our place of business, you know, like you've got your boss, you've got an owner, but it is not unusual for, you know, a very entry-level worker to talk to the owner and skip some of those middle people. That might be frustrating for those middle people, but there certainly is no guideline that says thou shalt not, right? Like, it is, you know, we would consider that maybe more of a social faux pas than a hard and fast rule. In the military, it's a very hard and fast rule. Like, you will not jump steps in the chain of command. So also, because there is a chain of command and people who are in positions of authority, which I stepped into in the civilian world, have a certain level of authority. And it's not normal for people to question what the guidance and directions of those people in authority are. Now, there are situations in the military where we are expected to question. You know, if we think that something is unlawful, if we think that we are putting people in harm's way, we are absolutely expected to speak up. But to the extent that there's a plan in place, most of us are taught, follow it, right? You may not agree with it. You may not understand all the pieces that go into making that decision, but we follow it. That's what we're trained to do in the military. And so coming into the civilian world, you know, it was very difficult to me as a manager to suddenly give my people direction as I would in the military and them to suddenly go, well, I don't want to, why do I do that? Why would I do that? Because I told you to, and I'm the supervisor, you know, like, so there was, and I'm sure that supervisors everywhere are saying, yes, because I told you to, and I'm the supervisor. So, you know, like it took some time. And even to the extent that I had to have a supervisor, and I'm grateful for this correction in my relationships with others in the workforce, is I would walk into somebody's office and say, you know, today we need to hire five people. And I would turn around and I would walk out. to me, I gave efficient direction for what we needed to accomplish for the day. For the other person, they receive that as very impersonal, very authoritative when, you know, I could have asked. And this is another piece that I don't think a lot of people know or appreciate. In the military, we don't ask. We're trained, you don't ask people to do things. You direct, you give orders, right? We are familiar with military orders. So in the military, and I ran into this on the military side, right? You'd say, hey, could you please steer the ship to 090 degrees? No. Helm, bring the ship to 090 degrees. It's an order, it's a direction. And so I became very familiar with giving direction to people. Now, in the civilian world, it doesn't work so well, right?
Yeah.
Because people want to feel like they're involved, like they are part of the conversation, like they have some agency in what they're doing with their day. And so somebody who walks in the room every day and just barks orders at them, which I wasn't meaning to be, becomes off-putting. Because of that, I felt like people were very like pushing me away at work, and I couldn't understand why a leadership that, leadership career in the military that worked very well suddenly was failing miserably in the civilian. Wow. Right. So I felt isolated in my workplace. I was not being effective. I was having to be talked to by my supervisor. Fortunately, my supervisor was a wonderful woman who had a lot of patience for me and gave me a lot of correction and guidance. But ultimately, that's really what's required. So when I talk about, hey, these are some of the struggles that I worked with in the military community, there were also some really good parts of the change, but were also challenging. So at least the military that I grew up in had a lot of stigma about mental health. And so if somebody was feeling depressed, if somebody was feeling anxious, and these are all very common things that I think the civilian world is pretty familiar with.
Right.
The military was very positive that we would not talk about those things to the extent that they could cause you to lose your security clearance, which would then cause you to lose your job.
Wow.
And so we, at that time, and I believe things are changing in a positive direction there, but at the time, I was struggling with some depression, some anxiety, and I didn't have a way to seek help. And I asked for it, and I was told exactly what I told you. Well, you can say that, and if I write this down in your record, you are going to lose your security clearance. You're going to lose your job. And I literally had a mental health professional in the military tell me, is that what you want me to write down? And I said, no, because the military was my support network. They were my housing. They were my job. They paid the bills. They fed my family. I couldn't fathom a way to tell them I was struggling. And so I stood up and I walked out of the room. I mean, it was like a 5-minute mental health evaluation, right? Fortunately, obviously in the civilian world, there's much better support for that, right? We are becoming a much more aware society about when those things happen and offering support. And to the extent that, you know, I don't know of a lot of businesses anymore that don't have something that looks like an EAP or an employee assistance program that provides some of those services, either at no cost or very little cost. Insurance companies largely cover mental health care at this point. It's not like an added thing that you have to go seek permission for. You know, you need the help, go get it, go get counseling, right? So there are some good things about that transition as well. But, you know, the big picture for your people is that, you know, those transitions are challenging. They change everything we know about the world or a significant portion of our life, right? We're not necessarily talking about, you know, somebody changing the dinner menu on you. But if you enter into a new relationship, you move to a new town, you know, we have these significant changes in our lives, and they may be exciting and they may have benefits, but they will also pose challenges. So for me, some of the hopes that came out of that were One, I recognize that I could change, right? And I find people that I run into from time to time who give me this story about, this is just who I am. You have to deal with it. This is how I am, right? As if it were a badge of honor that we dug our heels in so hard that we can't alter who we are.
Exactly.
I found it very positive and hopeful that I could change, because if I could change, then no matter what the system, you know, whatever was surrounding me, I could adapt and I could get myself to a better place. And that's a really good place to be in. So I can tell you that if you were talking to Lieutenant Cook 7 or 8 years ago, this conversation would sound very different. It wouldn't look like this, right? So this is part of my change, is being able to talk about mental health problems, is being able to talk about the struggle to have that change, because I didn't have all the answers. It took time to figure out new processes. It took time to learn how to be something different in an environment that needed more from me than my direction and my blind adherence to orders that were given to me. But that's a monumental change for somebody who was in that system for 20 years. I was so rooted in that system, I actually left active duty after 10 years of service. I was in the reserves for 2 years, and then I went back on active duty. That's how deeply uncomfortable I was with being in the civilian world. Second time out into the civilian world, I had a better perspective. And so maybe a little bit of that early transition helped me the second time around. It was like dipping your toes in a cold pool and at least knowing what you're getting into the next time you jump in.
Yeah.
So that hope that I am adaptable. I think that learning that a lot of those things that initially made me very abrasive in the civilian world are also really positive things if I can harness them and spin them in the right way, right? Because I'm very used to, I'll call it quick decision-making, that it doesn't take me a lot of time to weigh facts and plan a way forward. That I have found among my civilian counterparts can be difficult, right? And we struggle with decisions all the time.
Yes.
And certainly for me, there are harder decisions than others. But in the workplace, I generally feel pretty comfortable in my own decision-making ability, because I was trained to be confident to quickly judge those situations and come up with a path forward, because you can't sit still. The boat is moving. You have to make a decision about whether you run aground or you turn, right? That's sort of like the environment. There is a fire. You have to put it out. What do you do next? And those are the situations that military people are put in all the time. It also can be a challenge to slow down and realize that not every situation needs an immediate action, right? So again, everything is sort of this yin and yang, this pro and con, that as long as we can harness those things, they become very positive for us. And so I certainly think that, in anybody that feels like, oh, I've got this really prominent character defect, I get angry very easily, right? And that my response to that would be, there's a positive side to anger, because anger gets us to move. Anger gets us to set boundaries. Anger gets us to be passionate enough to make change in the world. So without some anger, we aren't really effective, but we have to be able to harness those things.
Right.
And so that's also been a big part of my lesson in this transition, is just being able to harness a lot of those things that we think, oh man, this is really standing in my way, but I don't have to give it up entirely. There's a good way that I can use this tool. So that is, I think that's everything that I have bouncing around in my head right now. Do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, I don't know which trail to go down, because there are so many I want to address with you. But the word that keeps coming to my mind is adaptability, that you learn to be adaptable Well, on the military side, you had to adapt to all of the things that were happening and learn to address them as they came up. But then you, on the civilian side, you also had to deal with adaptability in a totally different way. I saw a statistic recently that said the number one skill that you have to be successful, whatever you consider to be successful in life, is adaptability. And so I feel like that is the message that's coming up today, is adaptability, but on both sides. Would you say that's true?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. And it is, you know, I think that adaptability is the thing that keeps us from digging our heels in and saying, this is, you know, the world may change, but I will never, right? Because that is really, I mean, to me, I understand why people embrace that, right? Like, I have to feel like something is immovable, but that is such a, I have empathy for people who dig themselves into that situation, because not being able to grow and change and improve means we're stuck. We're very stuck. And in some ways, that is a very self-fulfilling prophecy, but not in the way that we intend, right? We become very rooted in who we are rather than being able to adapt. So I love that idea of, like, that the message is just adaptability. And I think that the one other thing that I did want to mention is, because I do work in HR, is, you know, we hear in the civilian world, hey, it's great to hire veterans because, you know, A, B, C, and D, they've got all these great characteristics. But I think there's also this idea that anybody who hires a veteran also needs to know there is some, you know, there's almost like a language barrier there for a while, and that absolutely all those great things exist, but there's also the adaptability to learning how to harness that or bridge that language barrier, attitude barrier, so that they can become very effective within an organization and not just, you know, try and turn an organization into a very military sort of mindset, right?
Yeah, it's like almost, it's like what's coming to mind is like a cultural shift. When you were talking about that, it's like you have a person from a different culture who practices different things that maybe we don't understand. But once that person shares what that practice is, why they do it, it makes sense to you. And so I kind of see it that way, that it's kind of a culture that you have to understand where they're coming from and why they're doing what they're doing. And so I feel like society needs to be more understanding instead of just automatically saying, oh my gosh, they're, you know, behaving like this, this, and this, and we don't allow that in our corporation. Well, maybe if we take a step back and say, let me try to understand from where they've come and what they have been trained to do. And maybe we can, as you said, harness those skills in a way that can be an asset to the company instead of just automatically turning them off.
Yes. And I think that is the, you know, I think of that as the process of being helpful through a change. And I think that really exists. I mean, no matter who you are, as soon as you enter into a new business, right? Like we spend a lot of time suddenly trying to figure out, like, what, you know, how do I talk to this person? Or worst case scenario, we spend no time trying to figure that out. And we just put our foot in our mouth constantly. But I mean, even my first meeting of the day with one of my clients was this conversation. Hey, I need to have this conversation with somebody else. You have a very long relationship with them, 25 years. What's the best way for me to go about it? Because it's not going to be a comfortable conversation, but I want them to still hear what I have to say, appreciate the necessity of the conversation, and realize that it's not an attack, right? Like, ultimately, I want to help them through a transition that they need to go through. And I want to be very, you know, I think it's culturally aware of how does this person best communicate. And this is a lesson for me, right? Like, this is part of the lesson that I learned in my transition out of the military, is how important it is, either for somebody, my supervisor at that time, who did a wonderful job, to slow me down and say, hey, I'm seeing some things. Tell me how it looks and feels from your perspective, and let's figure out how to make this work better, right? So she was a perfect change agent for my development in the civilian world. And I think that I'm grateful to have the opportunity, again, working in HR, to be that a little bit for people in businesses as well.
Yeah, that's so true. And I can also see a potential for people coming from military into civilian life. And instead of just the supervisor saying, you know, trying to understand the culture of the military, maybe the person from the military saying, this is what I was trained to do. And so this is what I do naturally. How is that going to affect things? You know, coming from maybe from both sides, if the, because I know military is not about, you know, it doesn't really promote emotions. But you know how I feel about emotions. That's a whole nother story. But maybe if that military person can just say, you know, what I said, like, this is how I was trained. So this is how I do things. How is that going to affect, or, you know, just kind of talk through, I feel like just open communication. There's so much that can be accomplished if we will just be more open to communication instead of jumping to conclusions.
I agree. And I think it was a great point about the emotional environment as well, because it, you know, I went from, like you said, an environment where in 20 years, I bet I never saw anybody cry, to a handful of weeks on the job in a civilian role and probably saw a handful of people cry. And they weren't wrong, right? We had put them in a stressful situation, and that was a very natural reaction, but it was very difficult for me to be empathetic toward, because I had not built up the thought process and mechanism to handle that. So in a weird way, you know, I would say, hey, you know, we need to let you go because your performance isn't very good. They would start crying and I would have the anxiety attack because I didn't know what I was dealing with. On the other side, I didn't know what I was supposed to do next. And, you know, again, my military reaction is basically like, solve the situation as quickly as possible, right? But emotions aren't things to solve. So it becomes very messy very quickly. And I do think that that is a place too, where, you know, military people aren't trained to feel and identify what those feelings are that are happening inside of them. So it can all come out a little bit as aggression and anger and frustration. And, you know, like it's that catch-all emotional pool that, you know, if I'm sad, it can just be anger. If I'm, you know, I'm feeling disappointed, it can just be anger. If I'm feeling resentful, it can just be anger. You know, like everything can just come back to this. And in the military, that can be very socially acceptable to be angry and verbally aggressive, right? Like we wouldn't necessarily think that was unreasonable. And so there, again, are times and places and probably some unspoken rules about how that works in the military. But hey, look, you can watch military movies and see that people are verbally aggressive, right?
Yeah.
That is not the part of military movies that people look at and go, well, that wasn't my experience. Like, it's their experience. So yeah. Being able to make those transitions, again, to just a place where people are talking about feeling sad or, you know, like bringing up something like a death in the family. And this is sort of an aside, but my grandmother died when I was out to sea, and the decision was actually made to just not tell me about it because they were concerned that it would impact me emotionally and I wouldn't be able to do my job. So I learned about my grandmother's death long after I could have done anything about it. I was at a funeral. So you kind of start to understand the extent to which some of those things are managed for us. And of course, you know, I was sad, but it hit in a very weird way because I was never put in a position where I could grieve that, where I could attend a funeral, where I could, you know, I could even be around my family while they were grieving, because they had kind of done all of that and started to move on by the time I even learned about the information. So wow. It was very difficult to process that. But then you go to the civilian world and somebody might call in sick because they had a death in the family, which is very reasonable. I can tell you that I didn't call in sick when I was sick, because sick in the military meant that you went and saw a doctor and the doctor would say, you have a cold, here's some ibuprofen, go back to work. Like that, mm-hmm. that was the, you know, that was how
the protocol. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's kind of how, like, you don't feel great. Guess what? Like, nobody cares because the submarine needs to go to sea and you need to be on it and it needs to be repaired. And that's what your job is, right? Like, so it is a very, very, very different culture in those regards, watching people take time off. You know, like, it took me a while to take time off when I wasn't, you know, feeling good, or when I wasn't, I was feeling distracted. I mean, like, what's a, you know, like, it becomes like, what's a good reason to take time off? And these are things that I wrestled with. And, you know, unfortunately, I'm sure I shamed my wife from time to time, or my son even, right? Like, because I had this mentality, like, why would you need to take time off? And my son would be like, I'm sick. Like,
right.
So go to school, you know, like,
yeah,
I don't get to take time off when I'm sick. And so, you know, like, and I think there were some unfortunate communication problems in my family, even because of what was expected to me, that I started to expect that of others. So I mean, like, it is truly amazing how deep, like, you could almost mention anything and suddenly it becomes like, well, in the military it's this way, and in the civilian world it becomes this, you know, like, so I think that it is important as people look at veterans coming out of the military that they don't assume this really is like changing jobs, right? Like, it is far deeper than just something and I think that probably is the best correlation, right? It is the idea of, I don't know, moving from a Middle Eastern country to America and suddenly right. seeing how different everything is in your environment, yeah. and how people look at you weird when you do the things that are familiar to you all of your life up until that point.
Oh my goodness. Andrea, I knew this was going to happen. This is such a fascinating conversation again with you. I keep thinking, this needs to be a book. Like, seriously, Andrew, have you ever thought about putting this into a book?
I have not. I hadn't thought of that.
I really feel like it could help so many people. Just a little bit that you've shared today, I think so many people can relate to this, but there are so many lessons that can be gleaned, especially now that you're on the other side and you're figuring out how to make this transition successfully. I just think, oh my word, like, I see a book here. I see a book. Would you consider writing a book?
I would, yeah. I'm actually in the process of writing a chapter in a book right now, but I'm just one chapter, I'm one story, right? And so I could see a topic like this turning into something more. Or being another chapter in a book, right? Like, that
yes.
could be this same discussion in terms of, like, what does that transition look like? Because I'm certain there are compilation books out there that touch on subjects similar to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would be amazing. I think it's much needed. And if you are interested in that and want help with that, let me know. I have an amazing editor that will be happy to help you. And I will do whatever I can to help you with that too. So please let me know. I would love to see that happen.
I will definitely think on that and reach out to you, Amy.
Yeah. Sounds good. Oh my goodness. Okay. So before we wrap up, I would like for you to tell the listeners and the viewers a little bit about what you do and how they can get a hold of you if they would like to get to know you better.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work in HR consulting and coaching. I don't like to just call it consulting, though I do that, a lot of that hands-on HR work, but I also have a passion for helping people learn and find their way through those employee relations, those sticky situations that we run into when we deal with other people, because we always run into sticky situations with other people and trying to find those common ground areas. The best place to reach me is either through my website, which I know you've got listed in a couple different places. There it is. Or you can reach me at andrew@headsupport.com. That's the other best way to reach me. And certainly I am happy to talk about this topic or just let people pick my brain on thoughts. Largely, I do, like I said, I do HR work. I am a trained life coach as well. So some of those areas that spin off of HR into just like, how would I do this? Or what would the plan be for this? I'm very happy to do that either in, you know, like just as a friendly conversation, or if somebody wanted to engage my services on the coaching side without that HR piece as well, that'd be great.
Awesome. Okay. So for those of you listening, Andrew's website is aheadsupport.com, aheadsupport.com. I will put it in the show notes so that you can just click on it there. For those of you watching, it will be in the description so that you can click on it there. And I will also tag Andrew so that you can connect with him on the socials if you'd like to get to know him a little bit better. So good, Andrew. Oh my gosh. Like I said, I knew this was going to be a good conversation. And I'm so thankful that you're willing to share all of this with us today, because I know it has been a challenge for you, and it's not easy to be vulnerable, but I'm so appreciative that you are willing to do this today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I again have had a wonderful time talking to you, Amy. So I'm hoping that maybe there will be a third time in the future at some point.
Absolutely. We can make that happen. I think I can pull some strings and make that happen. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you all for watching. Thank you for listening. I am so thankful for all of your support. You guys are sharing these podcasts, you're sharing the videos, and it just means so much to me, because again, my purpose in doing this is to help people gain hope. That's what I want, to spread this message of hope. And I can't do it alone. I need you to share these. I need you to leave reviews so that it can reach more people. So again, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And until next time, I'll be back next week with another episode. Bye.